Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the October 5 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Greg Ginder of F.C. Stone out of Chesterfield, Missouri, Joe Vaklovic from Standard Grain in Chicago, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Commodity Week, a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Look us up online. Listen to all of our agricultural programming anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. And if you listen to podcasts, that's kind of what it is, or you can find us as well in the iTunes store, on Stitcher, Google Play, and one of my favorite ways to listen through the NPR One app. Now let's begin our conversation as usual. Greg Ginder, I think we'll start with you. What's on your list of items to discuss for the day?
Yeah, thank you, Todd. The most interesting thing that I've found in the last 7 to 10 days has been the difficulty with river logistics, low water, and the fall of basis and the subsequent rise here in the last couple of days. And we can go over a couple different things with that.
Joe Vaklovic of Standard Grain.
I still think the yield numbers are kind of an issue here. I mean, I think that on next week's report, those are going to be the big ticket items, your corn and soybean yield estimates, you know, especially in the beans. Even if you change this thing a bushel in either direction, it's such a significant shift on the balance sheet. I think this thing is still up in the air here.
And Dan Zwicker, Zwicker Consulting.
Yeah, my question is, what's going to be the surprise of the October report? We usually get one. What's most likely going to be the surprise?
Let's begin with the river logistics, Greg Ginder. Tell me about it from your perspective.
Well, yeah, since we've had, until recently, all that dry weather and harvest was in full throttle, the river was having a very difficult time maintaining any water levels that would allow for maximum loading capacity. So they were using more barges to get just about the same amount of grain to export. So there was a real rush on barges, and we saw values go up. And for every 100 points that barges go up, just as an example, they're sitting at about 500 points right now, it's about 12 cents. So it takes a good bit of change per bushel to get barges down to the Gulf. Now, it was running about 300 to 500 points, depending on what river location you were at, higher than what we are today. We've had those rains that slowed down harvest. There wasn't a big tidal wave of grain that was coming to the market. And so we have seen basis get quite a bit better. Last Friday, St. Louis corn was about 50-53 under. Today, they're 20 under. And it's about the same numbers, give or take, for beans. I think they were about 55 under, and they're 28 under today. So just by holding on and holding out for a few days until the river logistic blip got behind us, you know, there was some real money to be added to the bottom line.
You think that's all fixed now? Because it's not fixed in local basis today, at least in a good part of Illinois.
Right. And some of the interior co-ops, private elevators, will still have kind of a lag with that. I wouldn't say it's necessarily fixed. There's a couple different things that will definitely help. The rains that we got yesterday and the forecast for the next 3 to 5 days that's supposed to sweep across Missouri, Iowa, and Illinois into Indiana will add some water to that upper Illinois and Mississippi River while this storm that's coming through New Orleans, the hurricane tropical storm, is supposed to go up and turn east away from Memphis, and that should help us out on the Ohio River. So to say that it is behind us, the worst is behind us. There will still be some kind of choppy trade here, depending on how fast the remainder of the grain comes to market. But at least for the time being, I believe that the worst is behind us.
Dan, in my conversations and watching basis for soybeans in particular, it appears that if you can wait until December to deliver the beans, you could simply store them commercially and make something like 5 to 10 cents, maybe more than that. Is that something that happens in these situations very often? Is it something that producers should take advantage of in your mind?
Well, I think it happens quite often. I mean, you got to keep in mind that the elevators are trying to make a profit on this too. I mean, they're in the business to make a profit. And during harvest, there is a premium for space. And especially when we're carrying this type of inventory left over from last year and what the inventory is going to be this year, that makes that premium for storage space all the more. Now, that is a strategy, you know, a farmer could use. I mean, that kind of the elevator gets their initial in charge for storage, and then the farmer is able to maybe pick up an extra nickel or dime if he sells it for December delivery. If he wants to stay open, then he runs the risk of losing everything and maybe costing more. That'll all depend upon how, you know, harvest pans out and I guess how the South American crop is looking around December 1st. But that is a strategy, and that happens quite often. I mean, the elevator is going to try to get as much out of their storage as they can. We are a capitalistic society, and that's just the way it's going
to
work.
Joe Baklevic, anything to add to this part of our conversation, or shall we turn to yields?
Well, I think that the carry in both the cash market because of this basis issue and also the futures market is definitely something to be aware of from a marketing standpoint. I mean, if you got the bins, they're definitely going to pay this year. Just keep in mind the only way to really take advantage of the carry is to make some sort of sale or put some sort of hedge under this market or make, you know, a forward sale for December, January delivery. You know, the futures market could slip away from you if you don't do anything about it. The basis situation, I don't think it's worse. So I don't know necessarily that you have to worry about locking in that portion here. But the future side of it is still where the majority of the risk is, I think.
USDA is due out next week on the 12th with its October crop production numbers. WASDE report is due that day as well. Informa, FC Stone, Landworth all out with numbers this week. They all got two or past USDA's figures, I think. I saw 50 bushels from one of them on soybeans and something close to 171 from one of them as well. What do you think about the yield numbers and what they might have if for USDA in this next report, Joe?
Well, all the privates have just kind of chased the USDA higher, I guess. Nobody wants to stick with their low numbers that are really far away from where the government's at, because the government does start to gain some accuracy as we get into September and more so even in October. So, you know, everybody's up to basically, what, 50 bushels for beans and 170 for corn, give or take a bushel or two for corn and maybe one for beans. So everybody's kind of in the same ballpark now. Could we see a big surprise next Thursday? I suppose we could. I mean, the general thought is that big crops get bigger and that you've probably got a greater likelihood of September to October increases given the August to September increases. But it's not a guarantee, and, you know, we haven't seen a whole lot of harvest yet. We've got, you know, kind of a lag here in terms of the normal pace. So I don't know what to expect. I mean, everybody was dead wrong in August and again in September, so we could all be dead wrong this time to get around too, I guess.
You got any ideas what the surprise could be, Dan? What do you think?
Well, October is historically noted for acreage changes, and I suppose that's where the surprise is at. The trade is all thinking that the year is going to light up a little bit based upon what farmers have reported, because the farmers have kind of reported a little better than expected, and that's always scary. But if you move the acres 1 million one way or the other, I mean, that's a 90 million bushel move in the calendar. It could make things a whole lot worse in the soybeans. It could improve things in the soybeans if it went the other way. So whether it's a full million or not, I don't know. My guess is we're going to see some adjustments in that harvested number simply because of the wet spring that we had. So I think that's probably where the surprise is at. Now, whether or not it's time for a bullish surprise, we'll have to wait and see on that.
What does your technical picture tell you about whether there's a bullish or bearish surprise set up for this month of October? Anything?
Well, I would say soybeans are, you know, they were able to make upward headway during the downdrafting seasonal during the month of September. And so far here during the first week of October, soybeans are trying to continue that uptrend with now the uplifting seasonal beginning to kick in. That usually kicks in anytime after the 10 days of October. So that's going to be, the crop reports can be real important to that. I would say with the uptrend in place in soybeans, it's telling me that maybe the bean report could be a little friendly. Corn looks to me like it's just hanging on at the bottom end of this trading range of 345 to 360 or whatever you want to call it. Anytime you go sideways like this, I always get scared that if something bearish would come along, you would break out to the downside of that sideways range, and that would, you know, tee up a move down to the $3 futures level, and that's just darn right frightening, I think. If a big yield, an acreage change would do that, I don't know, but I just looking at the charts, I think that's where the vulnerabilities are at. Beans are in an uptrend, so the trend is your friend. Corn has been consolidating here for a month, waiting for harvest activity to go a little further down the road so we know what farmers are going to do, what size of crop we're going to have. If we break out to the downside, that would be a quick 50 cents down. I know that's hard to imagine, but I wouldn't rule it out looking at the chart pattern.
Greg Ginder, given no surprises next week, what's your bias for both corn and soybean price trends?
Well, I'm kind of looking for maybe not the same numbers, but similar price action to what we saw last year. I mean, I think we'll be in a range, and that range is kind of yet to be determined. I hesitate to use $3.25 to $4 on corn if it gets really perky. You know, and I think anything with a 10 handle on beans is going to be kind of a little bit top end. So I'm looking for a sideways trade for the most part. I mean, good, bad, or ugly, whatever the October report has to offer us, I think we kind of carve out a trading range unless, like Dan says, there's something much more catastrophic to the balance sheet or in the macros that could affect us going forward.
I guess if there's going to be a bullish story, it's probably going to be in the beans. I mean, just any little small adjustment to the balance sheet, whether it's acreage or yield, or we overshoot on exports, which doesn't look likely this year, but anything's possible. It's early in the marketing year. It seems like it's going to be in the beans. I just don't know how you're going to fix this corn balance sheet without like a big acreage reduction next year. I don't know if the demand's going to be there to dig us out of this thing here without a big acreage reduction. And I don't know if we're going to get that because we saw so many bean acres this year, and maybe you're going to go back to a normal rotation to some extent. So I'm leaning like a sideways deal in the corn. I don't see how we dig ourselves out of this thing. I'm hoping we do, but I don't see the story.
What's longer term on your mind, whether it's good news or of concern in the commodity markets? What kinds of things have you been reading about or hearing about? And Dan, maybe I can start with you, that gives you hope or concerns you very much.
Well, my concern is probably not going to be very popular in the Corn Belt. Is, I mean, there's an old saying that if you want more of something, you either subsidize it or make it illegal. And as long as we're subsidizing commodities with ag commodities with safety nets, you're going to get more of it. So it's hard for me to see any major drop in acreage unless it's going to be a weather issue that comes along and does it. I do think we're going to lose some acres in corn and soybeans simply because we're planting more wheat next year. The spring wheat market was offering farmers $7 for next summer delivery. And I think a lot of those North Dakota farmers up in that area that raise spring wheat took advantage of that. That may have taken 4 million acres out of the Dakotas. So then that leaves
4 million acres that corn and soybeans have to fight for. And I would say the way the market is acting, the market soybeans are trying to try to pull some acres away from corn, the way it's acting right now. Because this, believe you know, farmers are actually deciding which seed varieties to buy. The orders start coming in now. They decide on what kind of fertilizer program they're going to have. So the soybean market is actually, I think, trying to buy some acres because it's going to lose 4 million from the spring wheat area.
Given that, if you're one of those producers in an area or here that decides they want to plant more soybean acres based on the price that you see for 2018, my thought process tells me that if you're willing to do that for that price, that you should lock it in. Is that what you're thinking as well?
Well, yes. If you're going to base your planning intentions based upon fall prices, yes, you need to probably put some kind of downside price risk in that. Now, that, you know, there's several ways of doing that. Your elevator systems have a lot of derivative type contracts that are available that allow you to do that. Maybe still give you some opportunity to take advantage of a weather rally, maybe in Brazil, but maybe not all of it. But it there are different avenues. Your individual commodity broker can help you with those type of strategies of putting a floor on, still kind of keeping the upside open due to a weather issue. And, you know, I do think the La Nina weather pattern is going to stir the weather pot enough to maybe, you know, keep the market on edge for a while. We're a long ways from harvest in a South America crop. We're just beginning to maybe start getting it planted. So there's a lot of weather there. And then there's still a lot of weather here in the U.S. to go through in 2018. So, but if you're going to make a decision based upon price, you then need to find some way to kind of protect that price if you're going to move acres because of price.
Joe, I want to come back to you with this same sort of question. When you look out longer term, what do you see that concerns you or that gives you hope?
I think the China ethanol story is very interesting. We all read here the last couple of weeks, China's going to introduce an E10 mandate essentially by 2020 is what they want to do. And you know, it's the world's largest car market. They've got more cars there than anywhere. So are they going to import corn from the U.S.? I don't know. It sounds like a good story, though. And if they go through with this thing, I mean, they've really got to bump up domestic production, and they're probably going to be relying on some imports, too. So, I mean, I'd like to think that that is kind of a bright spot or a light at the end of the tunnel here, potentially. Just as with any policy, you know, it's kind of a wait-and-see type deal. But I think it's potentially something to be optimistic about just in terms of big-picture corn usage, which is what we're struggling here as we continue to put out record crops.
Hey, on that note, and I suppose most of you captured already this week the news out of Washington, D.C., or recently, that EPA's changing or proposing changing the RFS. And on a related note, especially to China, did you catch that Ford this week got on the electric car bandwagon and that they were moving very quickly? VW, I think, by 2030 says all of their vehicles, Volvo's in on that, and GM is there as well. This could change things dramatically, it seems to me, over the next decade, and leave a whole lot of corn that needs a home that's being used at this point, about some 40% of it in the United States, for ethanol production. I guess that's one of the things I've looked at. I don't know, what have you seen that you're concerned about there in Chesterfield?
Well, I would definitely say that ethanol is a superior concern of mine, because over the last couple of years, the ethanol export program has been very robust and very helpful in knocking down some of the ending stocks that we've had. Just from the 15 to 16 crop, we took out 200 million more bushels than the USDA had the year before. So, and it looks like we're going to continue that pattern so long as nothing changes very dramatically. Now, the Chinese thing is a little bit disappointing. That was a market that we were kind of hoping to break wide open and do a lot of business into there. But with their mandate more along the lines of helping their farmers and controlling their domestic prices, it shut us out in that direction, at least in the short term. So that is one of the great concerns. I just want to make sure that the ethanol industry stays the way that it is. And then on soybeans, I think soybeans have a real good demand profile. And I think there's not a whole lot of problems that I see in soybeans outside of an oversupply.
Dan, anything to add to this part of the conversation?
No, I would be concerned about ethanol down the road. I mean, we do have a 5.5 billion bushel demand base there. I think that will probably stay with us, but I'm not sure we can grow on that. I don't know if we can grow that demand base, you know, upwards any kind of meaningful way. And the way these yields are coming in, it's obvious that the seed companies have been able to make a definite breakthrough on corn seeds and bean seeds as far as yield potential, especially soybeans. I mean, just constantly hear a lot of 70 bushel beans nowadays, where just a few years ago, upper 50s were a good bean. So it's just, you know, high prices that we experienced in the double O's in the early teens here, just generated more production around the world, and this is where we're at. We've just got a large supply of food commodities, no matter where you're at. And the grain companies are obviously having a hard time making money. That's why you're seeing a lot of grain companies lay off. They got hiring freezes. There's just no volatility in the market to make any money.
All right, so Joe Vaklevic, let's come back to you. And with each of you, what have you been talking to about farmers and their ability to generate income out of these low-price situations? What kinds of ideas do you have for them? And can you discuss some of those, please?
Marketing is tough right now. I mean, I can't fix a bad futures price. And the market really only gave you a couple different opportunities this year to sell profitable or break even levels, depending on who you are in the country and what type of yield you have. As I look at it right now, you know, I think the carry in the corn market is really the one friend that you could have potentially. Some of these 2018 crop year prices are not half bad compared to what we saw this year. You know, just to give you an example, what July 19 corn was $4.15 today. That seems really far away, and it seems like, you know, a market that you may not want to do a whole lot in, but that's a penny and a half away from our high in December futures this year. So, I mean, I'm not thrilled about selling anything here, but if I'm going to make additional sales, I'd probably honestly rather sell a little bit of next year's crop and sell that carry and hold off on what I can this year. I mean, like I said, there's no way to fix these bad futures prices without some kind of change here fundamentally. So that's the one advantage that I see right now. I think next year looks a little bit better if you're willing to be a little bit proactive potentially.
Greg Ginder, your thoughts?
Yeah, as far as new crop, I agree. I certainly have been looking at some of the cash prices in some of the locals around central Illinois, and I think October corn is hovering somewhere between 380 and 390 for next year. That seems awful juicy by comparison to what we're looking at right now. I wouldn't go all in on it, but I would certainly, you know, I'd certainly throw a couple thousand bushels out there, maybe a touch more. As far as old crop, the only thing that I, over the last week or 10 days, was I was basically begging people not to sell anything across the scale, given the basis. It was a complete blip. It was one of those things where you look back on it 3 or 4 days later and you could have paid the storage to January 1 and sold it today and made out a nickel or dime better. So It was everything I could do to keep people from selling into it. Now, if this basis does calm down, we get to more traditional basis, then, you know, those people who need money by the end of the year, I wouldn't argue with them if they needed to cash flow a little bit. But right now, it's just all eyes on the basis for me. If it starts to leak a little bit, I'll probably hold off a little bit, you know, and probably look at selling carries out into December.
And wisdom from Waco.
Well, I think you have to play the seasonality of commodities. I mean, that's one of the better rules of thumb, I think. Right now, prices are supposed to be low. This is harvest time. Once we get harvest behind us, prices then begin to rise seasonally as you go on into the new crop year. So I guess I would be willing to play the seasonal and see if we can get some higher prices as we go on into the spring months. Like I said, there's a lot of weather to go along with La Nina in South America. And then the further away we get from 12, I think the odds increase that we're going to have a severe weather problem here in North America. So, you know, I would play those odds at least at this point and wouldn't panic too much about pricing 2018 crop this far in advance.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can hear the whole of our program online, on demand, anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. There you'll find not only Commodity Week, but the rest of our programming, too. Our thanks this week go to our panelists, including Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, Joe Baklevic from Standard Grain in Chicago, Illinois, and Greg Ginder of FC Stone out of Chesterfield, Missouri. Don't forget that not only can you find our programming online, you can find it as a podcast in the iTunes Store, that would be Apple Podcast, along with the Google Play Store, find it in the NPR One app, and by using the Stitcher app. That's all about the programming here at Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You have a great day. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.